Welcome. This episode of State Your Line is brought to you by Lead Bank. Lead Bank understands the importance of Black History Month. This month gives us all a reason to share, celebrate, and recognize the impact of Black heritage and culture on America. Our nation was built on the principles of equal rights and equal opportunity. The history of the struggle of Black Americans for equal rights and opportunities makes their fight an American fight, the chance for everyone to be free from violence and treated with respect. Lead Bank is a community bank that applauds the accomplishments and impact of all Americans, regardless of color. The team at Lead Bank advocates for inclusiveness and believes in equity for all people because they understand that it's their fundamental duty to innovate and to help real people achieve financial security for themselves. If you are looking for high-quality financial products from a bank that is committed to being your bank for good, then look no further. For more information, call 816-220-8600 or visit www.lead.bank. Black history matters and Black lives matter. We support the work in our community that brings justice and well-being to our community, for our history and for our future. Welcome into State Your Line, a podcast for Kansas Cityans by Kansas Cityans. We are the Ritz Brothers. Today is February 2nd, and it's Super Bowl week, baby!
What's that voice?
It feels so good.
That's a new voice that you just did.
I didn't want to blow the speakers here.
Okay.
And I needed to like release. Like, I don't know what to do with myself for the next 5 days. Until that Super Bowl finally gets here, this is going to be a long week.
I agree. Yeah, very little sleep will happen. So I need like I had a lot of weird dreams last night and a lot of weird thoughts because I'm not going to be sleeping much this week. But I had a lot of weird thoughts and dreams last night of like what could go wrong in the Super Bowl and or like things like wait, did we think about this? We need to remember to do this. You know those like lucid, like half dreams, half thoughts.
Like, are you thinking like, did Andy Reid remember to like pack the helmets?
No, it's more like, dude, if we do this, but that's the thing. I wake up and I don't remember.
Mm.
So like, I need to just have the notes app open all week because I won't be sleeping a lot because I'll be so nervous and I'll be going in and out and I'll be having a lot of really, really bad ideas.
Write those down. Maybe get a pen and paper next to you if you know it's coming this week.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe take a little melatonin, get really weird.
Ooh, yeah. So anyways, yeah, it's going to be a tough week to get through work-wise. It's going to be a lot of like reading The Athletic, consuming content, reading every piece of content I can about the Super Bowl, but not every piece of content, because as we're going to talk about, the same storylines, the same content over and over again, it can get mind numbing. So,
my guy Colin Cowherd,
that's not bad, Kev. That's not bad, but
it's
yeah,
really just an impression of me doing Joey Molinaro's impression of Colin Cowherd.
Yeah, just soak it all in, soak it all in. We cannot. I repeat, we cannot take it for granted, turn into Patriots fans, not appreciate how insane this is. And this year is even harder for us as fans to take it all in, to take it for what it's worth, because we won't get to have the big Super Bowl parties.
Yeah, it's easier to take it for granted because it's not as in the forefront with COVID, without the media day today.
I know.
Or without the team traveling and consuming all of that content.
Oh, yeah, wearing Andy Reid Hawaiian tees.
Oh, yeah, man. I definitely am bummed out that we're not getting that.
Yeah, exactly.
This year. So stay appreciative of how rare this is and appreciate that. I mean, we're playing in the Super Bowl again. It's almost here. And I cannot wait.
Yeah. Watch all the YouTube videos. Maybe eat some tape, grind some all 22.
Just rewatch that week 12 matchup. You'll feel real good.
You feel real positive. I need to watch it.
Real positive.
Yeah, but
good.
So we have BJ Kissel on today as our guest. We're going to talk more about the game there.
Yeah.
Our mixed plate is involving the Super Bowl. We're going to talk more about the game there. So there's plenty of Super Bowl content. This is just kicking you off on what to do this week, which is watch YouTube videos,
grind
some tape, watch hype videos.
Listen to Run It Back 2020.
Listen to our song and share it.
Share it with everybody.
Share it with all your family and friends. Like, subscribe, retweet.
Get it stuck in your head.
I've got the song memorized. It's very stuck in my head.
Yeah, so if it's not stuck in your head, you're doing it wrong. Go listen again. And then, yeah, stay tuned this episode. We're going to talk to BJ Kissel and have a fun conversation about everything around the Super Bowl. And then mixed plate, we're going to be talking a little more Super Bowl. So with that, let's get a little openings and closings. First thing I stumbled upon, I was like, wait, is this a Leo, hey, look, it's Kansas City meme?
Is it?
It kind of was. It's not quite.
Okay.
But there is a children's book called My Friend that is out, and it was written by Tay Diggs.
I know him.
Let me double check that. But are you checking that for me? Yeah, it is Tay Diggs. You know him.
Yeah.
But it was illustrated and helped written by a local Kansas City artist, Shane Evans, he's not actually from Kansas City, but we're going to claim him.
Okay.
He worked at Hallmark and now he's opened a studio in Kansas City.
Okay.
Since then. So he was the illustrator behind the book My Friend. It's about two friends, children's book, who do everything together. They've got each other's backs, but then one friend sees another friend doing something very unkind, treating another person unkindly, and he steps in to show that everyone wants to be treated as they would treat others. So great lesson there. And Kansas City's own Shane Evans, or we're claiming him, is the illustrator for the book.
Sweet.
So it's been everywhere. John Mayer was singing the theme song for it on Instagram the other day. I saw Drew Barrymore, who we're going to talk about later. Yeah, we got two Drew Barrymore references in this episode. She was also promoting the book. So it's kind of everywhere. My Friend. Check it out if you're in need of a children's book.
It looks like Shane Evans illustrates all of his books.
All Tay Diggs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't you got me any of these books, Kev?
I know. Well, hey.
I have a child. I need content.
His half birthday's coming up here. Be here before we know it. So
it's,
there you go.
It's really true. State Your Line is never going to be like a dad's complaining podcast or like complaining about being a dad thing. But like, I hate reading the same book twice.
Oh, okay.
It's, I always try to, and we have like 100 books, so I haven't done it yet, but like, it's annoying reading the same book twice. Mm-hmm. So I know that that's naive and I'm going to have to read the same book multiple times, but yeah, it's annoying.
Yeah. Read him that, Chiefs Kingdom book.
Oh,
again
the Chiefs Kingdom
week,
book.
Every night.
I think I should read that for the podcast. It's so good.
Yeah.
It is so good.
It is that good. All right. So that is opening. The book is out now with a little Kansas City flair and tie to it, which is cool. And then another trend, we've been seeing it. We've been talking about it. That's ghost kitchens continue to pop up. We talked about Johnny's Wings last week in Waldo, which was in the district, I believe. Now we've got another one, Lee Summit and Waldo ghost kitchen called Smash and Dash.
No, Smash and Nash.
Smash and Nash. I wrote down Smash and Dash. Smash and Nash.
Yeah.
It's at 3rd Street Social, I believe, in Lee's Summit, and at the Summit in Waldo as well. They've got the ghost kitchens going there.
Okay. Okay, well, so what kind of food does it have? Is it?
As the name would suggest, they've got some smash burgers.
Okay.
So
Nashville
smash
hot chicken,
burgers.
I assume.
And then they've got the Nashville hot chicken sandwiches as well.
Mm.
So, like, I mean, if I'm creating a what does Kevin want to eat when he's very hungry, like these fried chicken sandwiches, smash burgers, this is top of the list. And then they round out the menu with some chicken fingers. They make a couple different ways, like they make a hot chicken finger. Then they got some tater tots and steak fries too. So,
all right, I'm gonna bust open this trend, this theory. Okay.
Okay.
I think this is a fake ghost kitchen.
Okay.
So ghost kitchens are supposed to be like a new chef comes in to, so a ghost kitchen is like, I'm a chef, but I don't have a brick and mortar place. I don't have a brick and mortar restaurant. Can I cook my food out of your kitchen and serve it carry out only, right? Carry out only. So it's, so the idea is like a new chef comes in, uses your kitchen, and it's for carry out only. That's why it's thriving for this or during this COVID time. Mm-hmm. So like there was like 9 ghost kitchens that have opened in Kansas City. Cosmo Burgers and Dodson, that follows the rules. Cult of Pie and Clay and Fire, yes. Johnny Wings, it looks like it. Observation Pizza, yes, it looks like it, because it's like their ghost kitchen is an event space, so they don't even have a real restaurant. But Smash and Nash, I'm thinking this is just only a marketing thing, and there's not a new chef coming in, and it's just the regular kitchen, and they're just Summit is just making burgers now, Smash Burgers, because Summit already has a Nashville hot chicken sandwich.
And I don't think it's a sandwich, or maybe it is a sandwich.
Yes, it is. The Nashville hot chicken sandwich from Summit is very good. It is one of my favorite sandwiches in the city. But I don't want that sandwich sullied by this fake ghost kitchen that sounds pretty fake.
You might be onto something, because like in the article written about it, they're interviewing Po Wang, who is the director of culinary operations for the restaurant group that owns Third Street Social and Summit Grill. So sounds like it fake, is coming from in-house.
Fake ghost kitchen. Busted. Wow. Busted.
Busted. Busted.
I'll get my, I'll still eat your Nashville hot chicken sandwich.
I'm gonna eat a smash burger too.
I will still eat that Summit, but I'll order it from Summit. I'm not ordering it from Smash and Nash. Okay.
All right. And then what else do we have opening up this week? We've got Cause and Shot Stop. So
yeah,
Yard Bar, I think Cause and Waldo has been open, but Yard Bar is opening back up, and Shot Stop is opening up this week. They've got, I believe you can get table reservations for the Super Bowl. If you want to go and watch the Super Bowl at one of those bars, we know that because we talked with Brett Allred, who owns all of the Cause locations. So little teaser, that interview is coming next week. We finally get to sit down with the man, the myth, the legend, who owns all the Johnny Cause and those bars. So
yeah,
really fun interview coming up.
Yeah, so I put that in there because in the interview,
yeah,
we talk about how, and part of the reason we had him on is we talk about those two places opening for the Super Bowl because we talked to BJ about the Super Bowl. That interview is getting pushed back, so I felt bad about not getting Brett a little shot right there of those places opening. But yeah, we interviewed Brett. We talk about it. We talk about everything. We talk about the my thoughts on everything, on all of taking over. We do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the teaser for next week.
All right, that is. Okay, next we've got a little what we try this week. This week, went out up north to the Northland, to the old Metro North Mall, where T-Shots is now. T-Shots is, if you know Topgolf, very similar T-Shots is. So pretty easy to make a reservation online. To reserve a bay for up to 6 people. It's $35 an hour. So
T-Shots with a Z.
T-Shots with a Z. So a couple bucks. This was Saturday at like noon. I think the price goes up Saturday night. But it's comparable, like a couple bucks cheaper an hour than Topgolf. And then a nice full menu, lots of appetizers. We got a couple sets of chicken wings. The Thai ones and buffalo, both very delicious. Hard to go from eating buffalo wings, though, to a tee shot, like to swinging a golf club. Got to worry about getting the drip of the sauce on the club. Don't want to do that.
Okay.
And then tried some Detroit-style pizza and garlic knots as well. All the food was phenomenal. They've got ice-cold pitchers of beer, bringing out cold glasses for you. So food, drinks, very good. Pretty top-notch.
If you only, let's say you didn't order pizza, mm-hmm. and you just ordered garlic knots, how many do you think you could eat? And like, oh, and like, man, you were just like, I don't care about the carbs and the butter. I'm going to go for, I think I could break a world record with garlic knots. I love them so much.
Like,
I feel 100? Like it's a bottomless pit.
I don't know. That's bottomless. I like 100.
Thousands.
Yeah.
I think so. I could eat 990 garlic knots in
digits.
One sitting.
I feel confident in that in one sitting.
Yeah.
All right.
But like French fries. You can just keep eating.
Yes. Agreed. Okay. So, but I feel like the hype around tee shots was all about the TrackMan and the technology that they have there, to truly, like, you know, club head speed, track your ball speed, all of that, and get some good information about your golf swing, which I was excited about.
Yeah.
But I will say the sensors, I don't know if they work better. They work differently. The nice things are, like, you know, if you're at Topgolf and you duff a shot, it'll just run across that turf and land in the netting.
Yeah.
And it counts just the same as someone who hits a nice little draw and drops it right in.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is fair. So this doesn't have the netting. It more just tracks your ball and acts like it actually landed on grass rather than turf. Mm. So you don't get, like, the unfair long rolls.
So it's like it's like the Prestige Worldwide of Topgolf. It's like, you know, they only want good singers for karaoke.
Right.
You know, this is for maybe a better golfer.
Yes. So, but the only thing is, I was expecting to see that, like, on the TV screen or something. We just never saw it. Any of that information, we just saw it tracking. We're like, well, that sucks. We thought we were going to get all this, you know, information about our swing and maybe measure out what clubs go which distance. Turns out, I guess you need to download an app. You need to download the TrackMan Range app. So you got to do all that beforehand. Then I think you maybe connect when you're in the bay.
Yeah.
I think it connects. So
Bluetooth, probably.
Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, it connects. Yeah. But there was none of that education was available to us. Mm. And if it was, maybe we're just dumb idiots, which is very possible. But I don't think that's the case. That I think one of us would have figured it out, and then there was just no one who told us anything about it. So I'm upset with them for that reason.
Okay.
But I would go back because it was fun, and now that I have the app, it'd be great to you know, kind of measure out my club distances.
That's a not my job situation where, like, the person showing you to your bay, like, their only job is to show you to their bay. They're not there to further educate you. Plus, maybe you guys didn't look like good enough golfers that they were probably like, these guys.
I didn't bring my own clubs, so yeah, maybe if I bring my own clubs, they would have treated me like that.
Yep. All right. This week I tried the French Market in Prairie Village in the PV shops.
Oui, oui.
It is freaking awesome. So it's like
It's right there on the Minsky's.
Yeah. It's half restaurant, half like market. So you can go there and buy, like, you know, prepackaged cheese and meats and like even like fun little decorations and stuff like that. That's French themed. And like they even have like little to go meals. So like you can go and buy like little meals to go in little Tupperware. Ooh. That looks pretty awesome. But then they also have a kitchen and they do
it's
like lunch
tiny,
and dinner and stuff.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't
it's
pretty
small.
Tiny?
It's awesome though. So I got this, I don't know how to say these words. Toulouse sausage sandwich. It was incredible. So it's a garlic sausage, Boursin cheese, which Boursin cheese is criminally underrated and needs to be on more. Dijon, cornichone.
This is worse than you pronouncing Italian words.
Yeah, cornichone, which I just looked it up and it's just French for pickle. cornichone, and then pickled mustard seed, confit onion on an egg bun. It was delicious.
Confit,
sure.
Yeah.
Side of fries. The biggest mistake I made. And
do
I
they
saw...
just call them fries there? They don't call them French fries.
Maybe I didn't even think about that. That's a good joke. That's one of those jokes that the person at the register probably hears like 1,000 times a day.
Yeah.
But what we didn't do, and this was a big mistake. And we saw other people doing this, other couples doing this. Order a crepe to share and split a crepe in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
Everyone else was doing it. So like regulars must know, like that's the play. And I was very upset that I did not get a crepe.
I bet you wish the staff would have told you about that, but that's not their job. So I guess they didn't.
So anyways, but nice. French Market, going back there for sure. It was so good.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that is what we tried this week. All right. Next, we've got our interview with BJ Kissel from Outside the Trenches podcast. He used to be Inside the Trenches podcast when he worked as the Chiefs reporter, like in-house reporter for I don't know how long, but it's been years that he was doing that. And now he has left that. He's with Let It Fly Media. And so we get to sit down with BJ and talk Super Bowl 55. All right. Today we are joined by BJ Kissel. He's the host of the Outside the Trenches podcast. So BJ, tell us a little bit about what's going on outside the trenches and what people can expect from your podcast over with the Let It Fly Media Network.
Yeah. So it's myself and Nick Lucky are the two hosts of the show. We used to do the podcast together called In the Trenches when I was working for the Chiefs as their reporter. The last 6 years we did the podcast for my last year there. And then now that I was no longer with the Chiefs and I moved over to Let It Fly Media, I wasn't in the trenches anymore. I was outside the trenches. So it just seemed like a natural name. And Nick wanted to continue podcasting. We love to do it. Normally we record right after the games for about 45 minutes to an hour, just talking through what stood out to us, our perspectives, share some stories. And we always try to I try to find something that we could disagree about because we don't take ourselves too seriously. We joke around a lot and we tend to agree. So I'm trying to find us something, you know, that good content where you really get into a disagreement. And we haven't found too many of those yet, but we're always trying.
It is fun to just record like raw reactions, like right after the show. Danny and I were season ticket holders. So we would like bring our podcast equipment out to the stadium and be like, hey, this might be a good idea to just start recording right after the game in Lot G. Sometimes it was, like, you know, Danny and I maybe weren't driving that game. And it was like, oh, we talked for 30 minutes and we can't use any of it. but I do love the raw reactions that you can have from that, you know, just right after that immediate post game and try to find something to disagree on. Kind of along that line, I like to, like during this week, watch a lot of like the storylines from the national like talking heads and find the ones that I really like to disagree with. What's the storyline about beating the Chiefs, like a way to beat the Chiefs that frustrates you the most?
Oh, man, that's a good question.
Because when I hear the time of possession argument, my head blows up.
That's a bad one. I'll go more to just like the nerdy stuff. Like you got to blitz Patrick Mahomes to beat him. You got to get pressure on him and blitz him. I was like, if you look at the EPA and like all the nerdy analytic numbers about blitzing Patrick Mahomes, it's about the worst thing in the world that you can do. He's too smart. And I've said this for 3 years now that the mental acuity that he has to play that position will never be properly credited because we get so enamored with the highlights and the physical abilities that what he sees and how he has that beautiful mind, just like connection with Andy Reid, and that they see the game the same way. With that photographic memory, you ask him about a certain blitz, he could tell you every time a team ran that blitz in an entire season. And it just that crazy mental ability, he'll never get enough credit for. I don't know how to put it into words. He'll never get enough credit for it. So I read it today where it's like, well, Tampa Bay has blitzed more than any team in the NFL since they played the Chiefs. And so it's like, okay, I hope like coaches know, please, like you can't do this. So you have to get pressure with four. And if you can't do that, you have no chance. And even if you can, Reed's so good about moving around the pocket. So there's a lot of talk with the tackle, like Fisher being out and all that. They're going to move him around. They do different things. I just let him sit back there, be a sitting duck. So there's a lot of storylines that I disagree with, but the blitzing Patrick Mahomes, I disagree with, but I hope they do it. So I don't want to put this out there in case the Bucs coaches are listening.
Yeah. The Bucs coaches are definitely listening to this podcast. All right, Todd. So yeah, you should blitz. But I think one of the things, BJ, that the reason why maybe that's not going to be appreciated enough, you know, the mental acuity of Patrick Mahomes, is because the fans, we don't get to see it, right? We don't get to see it from him or Andy. Him and Andy are the most boring press conferences on the planet. Like, they don't, they're so well trained. Like, Mahomes is like a 12-year veteran with how trained he is at not answering questions and just giving cliche answers. You probably got a little more behind the scenes views of those two guys. One, is that intentional on Mahomes and Reed to just be like totally locked up and not say anything, just answer every question with a cliche? And then two, like, what are some examples of maybe the two of them really flexing their intelligence?
Yeah, it's a question I've gotten a lot. And the great thing about Andy Reid is, as boring as his press conferences are, about once a month, every once in a while, he'll just zing you, because he just lets you kind of fall asleep and you kind of, you know what he's going to say. And then every once in a while, he'll just kind of zing you and everyone just starts cracking up, because like, I did not see that coming. It's normally about like a sweet and sour pork, a cheeseburger, or a free, God, he was answering some question one time about a player. And he was just like, you know, something about like a seventh round pick. I think it may have been Daniel Sorensen, like way back when he was a UDFA learning under Hussein Abdullah. And they were like, you know, what is it like to hit on a UDFA like that? You could step in and start playing right away. And he goes, oh, it's a treasure. It's like finding a Snickers in the freezer. It's just like, what? Where did this come from? But yeah, it does get kind of boring at pressers, because after I was there 6 years, the last 2 years I was there, every question I asked during a presser, I knew what the answer was going to. I could go write an article right then. So it is intentional in that if the inflection is a little off, if these guys say something that comes out not quite how they meant it, but it just, you can clip it to make it seem like something else, then radio stations and TV and like people just run with it. And the frustrating part is there are so many good people in media that would not do that, but it only takes one to do something to where it just catches fire and then becomes this narrative that you can't pull back. It's like, you can't put the toothpaste back in the toothpaste thing. So like, once it's out, it's gone. There's nothing you can do about it. So I think they are intentionally boring for that fact.
Yeah.
But I think as much as being on the inside is as guy with a journalism degree, I got there, I was like, just be honest, just tell your truth and just people will figure it out. I think you want that to be the case, but even when they are telling the truth and they don't say it quite cliche, like it becomes a headline, I don't want to know what was going to happen if these guys just get up and be like, yeah, that guy's not very good. Yeah, that guy's not very good either. Like they can't do that. The world would come apart.
I just want that. I just want to have a regular, normal press conference though. And like actually answer the questions. But do you think that contributes to us, you know, because we get to see Mahomes flex his physical ability all the time. We see that with our eyes, but we don't get to hear him do it on his mental ability. Do you think that plays a factor in it? And we just have to trust, you know, when guys say that, when guys like you and other reporters just say that, we just kind of have to trust you guys.
There are times in which I wish they'd be a little more honest just about how much goes into their position, and that even, you know, myself and all of us that watch a play and like, well, that guy screwed up. And if they explained everything going through their head as far as like their the tendencies they've studied, the way that they've studied certain looks and certain formations, that, you know, I've sat with guys and they've watched a play and they're like, they only run two plays out of this formation at this down and distance between the 30s or wherever it's at on the field. It's like, it's going to be one of two plays right here. Like, they know the game at that level.
Yeah.
I wish they were more honest about that, but that's the paranoia side of it, that they're never going to give anything away. Because on the flip side, I know for a fact that if another team says something that gives something away, our coaches know within like 2 minutes of that being said.
Yeah.
I'm not going to explain the process of what happens, but I will say, and I can give examples of playoff games where certain players from other teams, what are the statute of limitations? Am I allowed to say? I'll just say there have been playoff games where a New England Patriots defender, this was years ago, gave away that he was working on a certain blitz package and lining up in different places. And the next day they had a meeting that went over what to do when this happened, because this guy let it slip to a beat writer that went in one article in one place and it was found. And like, that's very real. So that stuff does happen. So I understand if you're willing to do that to other teams, you don't want to be the one giving them information. So like, I joke with Mitch Morris about this all the time, because he would say nothing. And I would I'd be like a one-on-one, and I was friends with Mitch, would sit with us in the cafeteria. I was like, Mitch, I'm not going to put you in a bad spot. He goes, I'm not going to get in trouble. Go, Mitch. I'm not asking you anything I haven't asked Coach before.
Yeah, we asked because we had Austin Ryder on the show last year, and I was asking him like simple things like, you know, when you can hear Pat doing a cadence or something, and, you know, every time he's like wide 80 or whatever it is, or all the little things Pat says that you can hear now when the mics pick it up. And he was just like, no, can't talk about it. I'm like, all I want to know is how do you know when to snap the ball, Austin? That's all I want to know, because it confuses me and I don't know how you know when to snap the ball. And I just want to know that. He's like, well, I can't talk about it. And so
it's like catchers getting signs to pitchers when there's a runner on second base. Like, it's always different. That's how I kind of think the cadence. There are times where like a certain word he knows it's going to be, mm-hmm. you know, on two after that and that kind of stuff. So it always changes. They have to mix it up. Or those defensive ends and all those guys figure it out. But yeah, it's fun to try to get that information. And you're trying to do it on a podcast. I was doing it in the locker room with no, like, not recording anything. Mm-hmm. Just like, I'm just trying to learn the game right now. And some guys would tell me, and some guys would just look at me like I was trying to take their job. And I was like, I'm not doing it. If I go blast this, I will get fired quicker than you will. Trust me. Like, they don't care about me. If I do something that ends up in some game plan somewhere, that's the opposite of what my job is right now.
Yeah, do you think not having you guys or not having reporters in the locker room, do you think that's one, like, a net positive for the players, but two, a net negative for the fans?
I think it's a negative for both. And I don't think it's uniform to every player, because certain players who just don't want to talk to the media, so they probably love it. And while I don't think a lot of players love talking to the media, just because it's not what their passion, that's not what they want to be about. And the guys who really wanted to talk to you are the guys you probably didn't want to go and talk to a lot, because they were doing it for the wrong reasons, if that makes sense. Yeah. And the Chiefs didn't have a lot of those guys. There's only a couple guys I can think of over my 6 years that would have actively like seeked out to talk to someone in certain situations. But yeah, I think it's a net negative in that, you know, the reporters don't get to develop that rapport with the players, and that will benefit the players more often than it'll hurt them. I think over time that tends to be the truth, because I think the majority of people are good. Journalists are good. If they have an outlet to talk to players directly about things off the record to get the story straight and to make sure that they're right, they have those open relationships. I think that's a positive, and they can't get those now. You know, as a fan, it's a negative because there's no one-off stories anymore. All the coverage you're getting about the Chiefs right now is all coming from the same presser. So no matter, you could turn into any TV station or you could read any article, all of the quotes are the same. Nobody's getting a one-off here or there. So like, literally it's, you could, as a fan, watch the pressers and you wouldn't have to read any other or listen to any other content. It's all coming from the same place. In the past, we used to go off and do a one-on-one in the locker room. We used to go do all these little things where you can't do that right now. So I think that's a negative. And I think it's a negative for the brands of some of the younger Chiefs players. You know, we don't know anything about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I feel like we would know more about him if there were more stories about him, and if he did more media and people were around him more, and the personalities of the guys and just kind of the whole vibe of the team kind of comes out in the locker room. And we saw that just the guys playing basketball, you know, in the locker room during open media all the time. Those stories were always told. And that was more interesting to talk about than the actual interview going on behind you, because I want to know if Chris Jones and like Colin Saunders were going to go nose to nose because they were arguing whether or not it was a travel or something. Like, that's more entertaining to me than the cliches being said behind me. So I think it's a net negative for both. I'm sure the players love it. I know internally there's people in the Chiefs that probably love it because it's less distractions. It's less anything that anyone has to worry about. But I think it does. It's not great for the fans, and I don't think it's great for the media in general, because most of those people are good and they want to do good work and give fans more information than they're getting right now.
Yeah. One player that I feel like you mentioned, we haven't heard his story as much, probably because people aren't allowed in the locker room, but Darrell Williams, a guy who I feel like you're a big fan of, a guy who, you know, stepped up into this role in the playoffs. And I don't know if any other teams have a guy like Darrell Williams who can just so solidly fill in. What do you think's made him so prepared to have the postseason that he has had?
It's a great question. I tweeted this out the other day and it ended up going viral and Darrell saw it, but it was during the game because Darrell Williams had been on the team for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I know a lot of people are like, it's this breakout player. He's been on the team for like 4 years right now. And the thing about Darrell that jumped out to me, because that year that he went undrafted out of LSU. A good friend of mine, Dane Brugler, who now writes at The Athletic, he's their NFL draft guy. He was really high on Darrell Williams. I remember talking to him at the scouting combine that year before the draft, and he thought he would go in like the fourth round. And I spent a lot of time talking to Dane about Darrell. So when he goes undrafted and then chose the Chiefs, because at that time, I don't say we had Spencer Ware, Sharkhandrick, Jamal, I think, was coming back from injury. So you still thought you had him. And then I'm sure CJ Spiller was on the team at some point.
back.
Yeah, I want to say we had like four guys that had played in the NFL, like veterans who had played. So for a guy who was considered the top undrafted free agent running back available that year, when he chose the Chiefs, it was surprising because they were so loaded at running back. If you're this high, like this commodity, you could choose where you go. Why would you come to Kansas City? The first day of rookie minicamp, I went and sought Darrell out after practice where everybody's talking to all the drafted players. And I go seek out the UDFA. I'm like, why did you come here? And he told me that he had a great relationship with Dylan McCullough, the Chiefs running backs coach. And they had stayed in touch. They met at the Senior Bowl that year and they had stayed in touch. And it jumped out to me that this guy was about more than playing time, this or that. He wanted to go with people that he was comfortable with and a system that he knew was successful and that he could learn in. And so that stood out to me. And then as I started asking him questions and you hear about, you know, in high school, he was the number two high school prospect in the state of Louisiana as a running back. LSU was his dream school. That's where he wanted to go from the moment he was born. So he chose, signed to go to LSU, knowing that the number one prospect in the state had also chosen LSU, and that was Leonard Fournette. And they were in the same class. So knowing that he didn't shy away from that, where nowadays you feel like he would just transfer and go to some other school, even 2 years into his college career, he's not playing a lot. He wants to go somewhere else. And Darrell Williams never did that. He knew Leonard Fournette was going to be there. He knew how good a player Leonard Fournette was. He goes there. Then Darius Geis comes in and takes over as a starter. So he never really got his opportunity to be a guy, but he was still voted as team captain. They loved him at LSU. And so that mindset isn't new to him. And so like him being ready for that moment, like this guy's been grinding his whole life. He's never had to fight to be the guy. He just wanted to earn his spot. And so it's awesome. He's a quieter guy. He's not going to boast about himself either. So when I see him get those opportunities, just as hard as he runs and the way that he goes, and then he celebrates after and he doesn't show a lot of emotion normally, you know how much it means to him. And that's why I tweeted out what I did during the game, because those are the types of guys that help you win Super Bowls. You got to have your stars, but those next guys have to step up and play. And we've seen that with Darrell Williams. You've seen that with a number of guys on the team this year, that it takes everybody. And Darrell's a great story. I'm happy for him. I hope he gets a chance in the Super Bowl to make some plays, because he's earned it.
I think he will. And like, speaking of next guys up, I feel like all week we're gonna talk about the offensive line and Eric Fisher not being there, and that's gonna be the storyline that a lot of people talk about. Is Fisher's absence, does that leave a leadership gap on the O-line, or is it more just a talent gap? Because Eric Fisher's kind of been the steady guy there as a lot of pieces have moved in and out, but is he like a team leader? I don't really hear a lot of stories about him being like, you know, the leader of that pack. Is it a leadership hole and gap, or is it more just a talent gap?
Yeah, there's leadership there. I think they all count, especially the offensive line. Those guys have to be in lockstep. It's the only, Coach Reed says this all the time, it's the only, you know, position in all of professional sports where your duty is to protect somebody else. And so, and you're also a less athletic person reacting to somebody more athletic than you. And so there are things that are going to be an issue that they have to work through, not an issue necessarily in the game, but the communication, you know. And he's had different left guards next to him, but, and Coach Reed and Andy Heck, the Chiefs offensive line coach, they do a good job, even going back to like training camp, of rotating different guys into rep next to each other. Like, this won't be the first time that Mike Remmers has taken snaps, you know, next to Wisniewski or whoever ends up playing left guard, however they shake it all out. But I do think just the natural feel for how somebody plays next to you at that spot, how they pass off the combo block or the stunts and guys twisting around, just that communication and how they work, I think is something that you can't quantify. But you may see during the game, you know, when somebody gets passed off and you don't quite get to him. But that being said, you know who else know, like, we talk about it, it's going to be a huge storyline. I'm kind of tired of the offensive line one too, just because nobody's using the, Well, Andy Reid knows this too. Everyone's like, well, they don't have the tackles. They're just going to like, they're going to make Mahomes just sit in the pocket and then just hope the backup left tackle can hold his own. It's like, no, they move him around. They bootleg. They do a bunch of jet sweep and ghost action. Anything you could do to slow down those defensive ends also gives your tackle help. And so it's not always about putting a tight end over there or chipping him or doing all those things. There's a lot of things you can do with motion and all that just to get him to hesitate for a second, because it doesn't take long for these guys to get open. So I don't know if that necessarily answers your question, but like on the leadership side, yes, in that they know what to expect. They know that they just had that camaraderie, that continuity of playing next to each other, which I think is really real.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things too that you can – sometimes notice the difference like from in-game adjustments, and offensive linemen can, I think they adapt really quickly. And I feel like that kind of stuff, like when you see stunts and passing guys off, those types of adjustments are actual in-game adjustments. Cause I think as a whole, we overrate the whole in-game adjustments thing, but I feel like that seems like a real one that actually happens in that kind of thing.
Yeah, they're not drawing up new plays on the sideline like back in the day. But they have rules for all of their stuff. And a lot of their offensive plays aren't necessarily plays, they're concepts. And they don't even know what route they're running until the receivers line up and see where the safeties are, where the leverage is. And so I've said that before, like they don't make play calls, they make play concepts. And that's why mentally it's not as simple as you call a play, I know I have to run this route because that's what the play call is. It's literally – you call the concept and there could be 15 different routes I run. It depends where everyone's lined up. And so that's the mental difference of where they're at. And that's why like the in-game adjustment, like they're already built in. So unless they're reading something wrong, the conversations on the sideline aren't about the play call, what you do against this. It's why didn't you do this? This is our rule. They have a rule for everything. And so that's kind of how their offense is taught. And that's why when they talk about it being this living, breathing thing, that's why, is that there's an answer to everything and they're never caught in a situation where they have to call a timeout because they don't have the look they want.
And that, I think you've said more about the, I feel like BJ has said more about the offense than Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes ever has explained the offense that in depth before. I feel
don't
like,
tell him.
I know.
And I don't know I don't know everything, but I picked up a few things.
Yeah. All right. So I want to talk about defense a little bit. You're a big Frank Clark defender. Mm-hmm. I feel like BJ, we've bashed Frank Clark a lot on this podcast. Why are you defending him? Why? Stretch out, go ahead, stretch. Like Danny wants to fight him. Cause that would be a really good idea, but like, why are you such a Frank Clark defender?
I knew what he was going through last year, physically, what he was playing through. And I knew he wasn't at 100%, but him at 70% was still a lot better than other guys. So I knew the buy-in, the competitiveness, the selflessness of these guys get a lot of money. And there's just, when you're on the outside, and it's not a slight to anyone, but when you don't see what these guys are going through or what they put into it, you have a different appreciation. And so like when I go, Frank's one of the guys, when I'd ask him what's going on, like he'd tell me like, here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And like, he would show me like his booklet of studying offensive tackles and how his agency will help him. And I think he even tweeted some of that out last year, where he has so much information. There's so much more to how he approaches the game than you'd think from his personality and the way he comes across and just kind of laid back, not really caring. But when it comes to football and his craft, man, like he is 100% locked in. And when it comes to the contract and the production and all that, I'm very much in like the team mentality, in that, you know, guys are paid what the market says they should be paid. A lot of times it's not so far off. It's like any business. Nobody nowadays is going out and paying $15,000 more than they should for a car, because you've got all these analytics, you've got all these numbers that say this is what this car is worth. And it was the same thing with Frank. The market determined what Frank should get paid to make that move. And from a personality, from a leadership standpoint, to move from Justin Houston, who was a quiet, phenomenal player, but a quieter guy, to move from him and Eric Berry, two quieter guys, to Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark, it changed the entire dynamic of the defensive room for the Chiefs. And then you took those two leaders out and the way they went about things, and you put in Tyrann and Frank. and it's not little brother to the offense, and that they're going to be a reason that they win football games. I got to see it firsthand. I got to see what Frank went through. But then to me, it's not this guy's being paid this much, this guy's being paid this much. It's collectively as a group, this group works. Like, this is the group that they want. They work together. It's the right mix of personalities. And Frank's a huge part of that. So I don't just care much about the stats as much, unless you want to talk about the fact that he has more sacks than any other player in Chiefs postseason history. And he's been on our team for 2 years and we're going to 2 Super Bowls, but hey, if we want to talk,
he's
sacks,
just run into a lot of them. BJ's just run into a lot of them.
Yeah, run
into them.
All his sacks are coverage sacks. No, I completely 100% agree with you that, like, that was the market. Frank Clark was going to get that amount of money from anyone, and the Chiefs needed an edge defender, absolutely. And so they went out and they spent fair market value on what was thought to be, you know, one of the best edge defenders out there. So completely agree with all that. It's just frustrating to watch him. So one of the things I like doing when the defense is on the field is picking a guy and watching him, because it's more fun than following the ball when you're watching your defense. And just picking Frank Clark and watching him can be really, really frustrating. And then when you see the stats that say, you know, like ESPN's pass rush win rate and double team rate, and when you see Frank on the low end of both of those, and you're watching him, it gets really frustrating. And so I think that's where it comes out. Now, if we
get all that, and I'm not defending that he's if I had to pick the 5 best edge rushers, that I'm picking that guy. Mm-hmm. As far as talent and production, like a fantasy football. But if I'm picking somebody that I've covered with the Chiefs to go out there and play edge for a Super Bowl, like, Frank's that guy, because he's going to give everything he has. And he does have that talent. He can turn it on. And so, like, it just, that group works to me, and I'm okay with just this group works. Now, there's going to be a point where you can't pay a guy $25 million a year if he's only getting 2 sacks, and they have to make that decision. But I would be hard-pressed to believe that they're going to make that decision while it's all working. Now, when they get to where Brant Tillis and Chris Shea can't make magic with the salary cap anymore and they got to do something, they can go back and make that call. But as long as it's working and the group is winning, they'll take their rings and other stuff later.
If we win 2 Super Bowls, I mean, you know, Frank Clark's a ring of honor. And
2 sacks
every
Super Bowl. And you're like, everything
was worth it. Yeah, absolutely. Everything was worth it. The entire contract's worth it if you win 2 Super Bowls, and that's just how it works. Another guy that I think frustrates me when watching games is Ben Neiman. Now, maybe you probably got to know him a little bit more than most people do. Again, this is the season that he's seeing by far the most playing time. And he doesn't do press conferences or interviews, and he doesn't have to talk to anyone. So no one really knows much about him, but, like, why does Ben Neiman play?
I feel like I'm back on, like, with the Arrowhead Pride guys, because they get inundated with this stuff all the time. They could probably give a better answer to the X's and O's stuff. My simple answer is he knows the defense. He knows where everybody's lining up. Same thing I would have said about Anthony Hitchens. I've been an Anthony Hitchens defender since he was getting called out 2 years ago also. Yeah. So they both have the green dot, which means they're communicating with the defensive coaches. They're lining everybody up. And to think that all the guys know everybody's position and where everybody needs to be on any play, it's not the case. You need somebody in there kind of orchestrating where everybody goes. And the nicest thing, I like Ben Neiman. I've talked to him. He comes from a football family. His dad was a longtime defensive coordinator for, I want to say, it was Maryland. He's
of
a Maryland.
Of course,
Boston
he's a coach's college. Son. Okay, got it.
Yeah, and I think he's at Montana or Wyoming. He went from somewhere in the Northeast to somewhere on the other side. But he's a longtime defensive coordinator, very intelligent player. He was up in Iowa. And if there was somebody that Steve Spagnuolo, who's a very good defensive coordinator, and, you know, if there's somebody they thought would do a better job, that guy would be on the field. That's all I could say. I trust the defensive guys to put the best players out in the field.
And that's what I say every week. I'm like,
it makes it easy for me, though. It's like, smart. They're smarter than
I am. Steve Spagnuolo knows more about football, has more football knowledge in his pinky nail than I have in my entire brain, possibly. But watching him, and then, like, especially during the season when Willie Gay was healthy and like, when other guys were healthy, like watching them next to each other with my eyes, it just wasn't, there was
athletically
something
it was, I guess, up. And this is a completely hypothetical and I don't know this, but it's, would you rather have the more athletic guy not in the right spot, mm-hmm. not going to make a play, or the less athletic guy who's where he's supposed to be, you just hope he makes that play. So like, which is better, which is worse as a coach whose job it is to teach the guys to be in the right sure. spot. So, yeah. and that's mm-hmm. not to say that everyone on this, and I don't know this, so if anybody's listening, yeah. I'm not saying anything, but that's also not to say that everyone agrees. It's not like the scouting staff that drafted Willie Gay wouldn't say, put Willie Gay on the field, mm-hmm. while the coaching staff is saying he's not quite ready. You know, yeah. those kinds of things are also very real in the conversations we're having. Doesn't mean they're not also having them. Yeah. But from
again,
a coaching
a hypothetical,
standpoint,
BJ yes. doesn't know if those conversations are happening, or happening or not. Pure hypothetical.
It's not like I'm talking to these guys every night. They're kind of busy and right. Yeah.
So that's the guy where, like, I feel like we're always looking at snap counts coming out after the game and yep. seeing how much he plays. Anybody else's snap count surprised you in the playoffs, BJ? And do you expect to see anything different snap count wise in the Super Bowl from any guys?
The snap counts is tough because it's always dependent upon like what formations that the offense is going to go in. And if they're going to run, you know, 11 personnel with three wide receivers for the majority of the game, because they feel like that's the best matchup for them offensively, then you're going to be in nickel a lot more. So you're going to see a lot more Ben Neiman. And so if the Bucks feel like they have a decided advantage with a certain personnel group, especially Tom Brady, they'll stay in that personnel group and go no huddle. And so Tom Brady's notorious for that. So if they feel like, hey, we've got the matchup, Ben Neiman's on the field, we're going to attack him, you'll see him go hurry up just so they can't sub a defensive player. They can't pull him out. He did it with New England all the time. Whenever they went no huddle, it was for no other reason than they liked the personnel that was on the field for the defense.
Yeah.
And so as far as snap counts, I'm excited that we're going to see any snaps from Juan Thornhill in the Super mm-hmm. Bowl after getting hurt at the very end of last season. And that sucked for, I saw him in the locker room. I talked to him after the game of the Super Bowl. You're just sitting there while everybody was celebrating. And he just kind of had that, like, I'm happy, but like, I don't feel like I earned this kind of look. And I said right then, I'm like, I can't wait to see you in the Super Bowl next year, because you're going to be so fired up that I hope he just doesn't lead with his helmet, because he's going to be fired up the first time he hits somebody. And then L'Jarius Sneed, young guy. I never got a chance to be around him or know him. But for what he's doing as a fourth-round rookie, I think Pro Football Focus had him as the number one cornerback, rookie cornerback in the league as a fourth-round pick. I'm excited to see what that guy can do on the big stage and have guys like Tyrann Mathieu make sure that his mind's right and he doesn't get too hyped for the game in this week. But those young guys I'm excited to see in this situation, because the veterans, the Frank Clarks, they're going to have this opportunity couple more years on the contracts, but these young guys, like, this could be the start of, I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to the Super Bowl as a rookie. You know, these guys, this is what they're going to know. And as long as the processes and the culture they've established, I know it's talked about all the time, but it's very real, and that yeah. they expect excellence. And that was my biggest takeaway from being around them last year. And when I left, that these guys weren't satisfied with winning. Tyrann Mathieu doesn't play football to win Super Bowls or to make money or any of that stuff. He's trying to become a legend in a game that he's trying to give back to. Frank Clark is trying to be a legend. They're trying to win one Super Bowl, two Super Bowls. They could win a Super Bowl. Tyrann Mathieu's going to be watching film the next day. That's just how he is. It's how he's wired. And it's why, like, they're never going to be complacent. They're never going to be bored. I know some of those things get thrown around, but you spend 5 minutes around these guys, they're not bored about anything when it comes to the game of football. So.
All right, so things go our way Sunday. Let's say hypothetically that's the case. What are you going with, like, reaction GIF wise on Twitter? What's your other than the dude pounding the roof of the car to CCR? What's your yeah. reaction GIF? What are you going?
Although,
with?
I'll break the news here. If we do that one, somebody on Twitter said it'd be really cool if they won the Super Bowl for me and my son to do this together. In the back of the car. So Chiefs win the Super Bowl, I'm gonna have my wife do it. My son and I are gonna be in the back seat of the car.
Nice, nice.
The Monday gift, which I have. That started in 2015 when we had like the 11 game winning streak after the Steelers game. Yeah. I did it after that game, and I was a baseball guy, so I'm superstitious. And I was like, well, I tweeted this gif after the win. Like, I got to keep doing it. I did it so much, and they won like 11 games, that it became like a brand. And then yeah. when I left the Chiefs, somebody tweeted me like after week one, like, you're not gonna do this anymore.
Yeah,
like, it's not the same account, but I guess And it still gets numbers on like engagement and stuff. I have no idea how this.
It's good to see. It's good to see. It's a great. It's a great feeling. It's a good reaction gift.
I like the Mahomes, and I took this personally. Like that is just such a perfect meme. Like that's the go-to, especially with Tom Brady, and he didn't mean it. But now, like anything these guys say, they're gonna find a reason to be fired up about.
Yeah.
But I think Tom Brady said, you know, today, like, you know, he thinks he can make every throw or something like that about Mahomes.
I saw that.
And I don't think he meant it. Like this one of those, like, it's probably not how he meant it, but we're gonna take it. we'll take it the way that that Patrick Mahomes is probably gonna take it right now as he's.
Oh yeah, and then JPP said he'd never heard of Rimmers.
And I saw it. Like, just call him by 75. And I've done that with players too. I didn't always have a camera in their face, but these players don't talk about players by their names. They talk to them by their numbers. That's how they watch film, and they don't say his full name. Because that didn't make like 75 does this, 72 does this.
That's another Andy Reid staple. Like in his pregame when he's on 106.5 The Wolf now, he just talks about players by numbers, and you're like, it sounds like you don't know who you're talking about. Obviously he does, but it's kind of funny because it sounds like
They all do that, like all the players, because that's how they speak in the meeting rooms. That's how they speak. So when I saw that and I saw Harold Koontz tweet it out, and I think I replied, I was just like, hey, I hope it wasn't. I would love for this to be a thing, but it may have just been because they don't know the name of the player. Yeah. They just know the number. You ask about 75, we'll probably give you, if they would be honest about this stuff and not be a cliche, they give you a full breakdown about 75 and what he's good at, what he's bad at, how they set him up, all those kinds of things.
Yeah. And it was too bad the Zoom moderator didn't know Harold Koontz's name either and did a really bad mispronunciation of poor Harold. So,
poor guy.
Yeah, I know. He corrected him though. So Harold, good job correcting him. All right. Last question. When this is coming out, it's Tuesday. How do I pass the time till Sunday? Like, what do I do?
Mandalorian's pretty good. I've been watching that with my son. He loves Baby Yoda. Got that. And just go back and watch all the playoff. Like, go back and rewatch all the regular season games to get hyped for it.
Done.
Get your gifts ready. Get your stuff ready. And like I've been saying for 2 years now, don't become Patriots fans. Like, don't take this for granted. Don't take for granted that we're playing in the Super Bowl. Because it sure as hell wasn't easy for the guys with this COVID environment to be prepared. They get tested every single day since like July or August or whenever they reported for training camp. Like, I can't imagine every Bucks player and every Chiefs player is going to have COVID in like 3 weeks. Like, they're going to be so, they're going to go out to every restaurant. They're not going to care because they've been so locked down that I fully expect everyone to have COVID very soon. And hopefully everybody's okay. I don't mean to make light of it, but they've been on lockdown this whole time. So
No, BJ, we're going to clip that. We're going to clip what you just said. I hope everyone has COVID very soon. We'll run with that as the lead.
That's the headline.
And if you really wanted to buy your time and you're going crazy, you can shop for my son. His 6th birthday is on Sunday. So if you want to spare that time, get my son a birthday present.
Happy birthday.
All right.
Marvel.
BJ Kissel, Outside the Trenches. Thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate you guys having me on.
All right. Thanks to BJ for joining us this week. All right. That helped me. That helped me pass some time. Just therapeutically talk out the Super Bowl with somebody. And was fun to get kind of his insight on everything. Like the Frank Clark perspective he brings. Like, that's just awesome that he has that perspective.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting what he said about Brady keeping the personnel on the field. Like, I have read a lot of articles and listened to a lot of bullshit on TV, and I've never heard that before. So that was, like, solid insight. And the Darrell Williams stuff, I really appreciated it. I'm gonna listen to more of his podcast this week to again, get some game insight.
Hell yes. All right. So thanks to BJ for joining us. Next. Oh, man, it's been a while because the Kansas City Star, Letters to the Editor, have been trash. And all they've been doing is complaining about politics, the election, and COVID, and everything wrong in the world. And I just wanted people to start caring about petty things. Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted. And finally, it has happened. And people are caring about petty things. We have got, Angela Miller from Springfield, Missouri. And she is upset with Representative Chris Sanders, who seeks to make
the days even colder and darker. So he is proposing a bill that would keep Missouri on daylight saving time all year
round.
Full
support.
So it would shift the sunrise like right now from like 7:35 to 8:35, which that's about to happen. We're about to spring forward here in March. So he wants to basically stay on daylight saving time all year round. She, Angela Miller, she says that we've tried this before in 1974. I didn't know about this. And tried making it daylight saving time all year round. And she says that Americans hated the experiment. And that there are reports that kids died in accidents at dark school bus stops in Florida. So don't let anybody else in the country do it. So basically she says, let's end springing forward and falling back and just eliminate daylight savings time altogether. And
there's no time. There's no clock.
There's no daylight savings time at all. There's no springing back. There's no,
so there's just standard
run on regular time. There's just standard time. Yes, that's it. And there, I guess there's a bill to do that. And that's what she is in support of, which, like, who wants it to be, who cares if it's bright out at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m? I want that extra hour of time at the end of the day when people actually do stuff with it. Like, the fact that she's just like, I want it to be, you know, the sun to rise earlier. Like, who cares? Like, maybe we have better lights now than we used to because technology has improved and we probably have way better street lights. So I think we'd be fine.
I'm trying to read
without
I
this.
I am
100% with my guy, Representative Chris Sander. I think he represents part of like Cass County and Jackson County. Like, I am fully supporting this guy. The fact that he wants to have daylight savings time just all year round, that means the sun stays up later all year round. You don't have to come out of work at 5 o'clock and it be dark. It's just you get an hour, extra hour of sunlight at the end of the day, every day. I'm fine living that lie. I'm fine fully supporting, who do we got? What's this guy's name? Chris Sander. So then I was like, I wonder what Chris Sander's all about. I wonder if I could really get behind this guy.
A representative from Missouri, not,
So, in addition to his legislative duties, Sander is also the founder and owner of Powder Monkey Fireworks Incorporated in Weldon Springs, Missouri.
I like that.
Yeah, so that's how he made his money. That's, you know, I'm not here. Who am I to judge how you make a career? Powder Monkey Fireworks. He's the CEO of it. So that's his day job. His favorite book is the Bible. Okay. And the last song that got stuck in his head is the national anthem. So
putting a picture in my head real quick.
He won the Republican primary and then didn't have a challenger and won 100% of the vote in the general election and is now a state representative in the House of Reps in Missouri, which is, that's just mind blowing that the political process. Sometimes I'm like, who are these people running? He beat out like a 22-year-old in the primary, a 22-year-old, again, not judging what you do for a living, a retail store shift manager. But I probably would have voted for that guy because he was an Eagle Scout too. So like, I think that gives him the edge. For me, Eagle Scout versus firework company CEO, I probably would have gone with the Eagle
Scout. There's a funny Bo Burnham song called Pandering. And I would imagine lying about getting the national anthem stuck in your head being the last. That might fit into the you might look up pandering in the definition and just and that that quote just might just be there.
So I really wanted to tie my wagon to Chris Sander. I don't know if I can after further research, but I'm very in support of this bill to just have daylight. And how hilarious would that be if Kansas recognized it or if Kansas still switched back and forth and Missouri just said, we're full-blown daylight savings. Imagine the chaos that would happen for 9 months a year. That would be hilarious.
So it happened in 1975 as it tried to like – to try to calm down the energy crisis because it was like, oh, if there's less lights on, at night. If the sunlight is the main source of light for longer, then it can help save, conserve energy. It didn't really end up working. They said the golf industry was going to make a lot more money.
Oh, hell
but,
yeah.
But they didn't really see the results that they wanted, is basically what I'm getting at.
Let's just live the lie of daylight savings. I'm very, very pro that. And apparently I'm very pro Chris Sanders. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. That's my – I just want to talk about daylight savings. It's just a passion of mine. All right. Next up, we've got Kansas City and of the week. Which I'm going to give to Joe's Kansas City. But I'm also Midwest mad here.
You should give it to Drew Barrymore. Drew Barrymore should be the Kansas City of the week.
You think Drew Barrymore should? Okay. But here's what I'll say. I was going to give it to her, but then so basically Drew Barrymore had a contest for the best ribs in America. It came down to Joe's KC, a place called King's Barbecue in North Carolina, and Rendezvous in Memphis. That's what it came down to. So Drew tried all three on her show. She is easily the worst at giving descriptions of barbecue that I've ever seen, and her sidekick was probably worse than her at giving descriptions.
That's shocking.
Yeah, they had some food critics on. They had three food critics on and a Twitter vote. So the Twitter vote, guess what? Kansas Cityans packed the Twitter vote, and we won.
That's
that.
That's shocking as
61%. Well. 60% of the vote when there was three contestants. So a landslide victory. Kansas Cityans won that for Joe's Kansas City, the Drew Barrymore Best Ribs Twitter vote. So then Drew invites her panel of experts, plus her and her sidekick are voting. So there's six total votes. Two experts pick Joe's Kansas City, bringing Joe's total votes to three. And then the other expert picks Kings, and then her side pick picks Kings, and then Drew Barrymore with the deciding vote also picks Kings to bring it to a two-way tie. So screw you, Drew Barrymore, for picking Kings Barbecue over Joe's Kansas City. Obviously, it's way better. Kings Barbecue has a lower Google review rating and less reviews compared to Joe's KC. That's how I'm saying officially. She doesn't know what she's talking about, so very frustrating.
I gotta figure out. Barrymore. I'm trying to figure out who the sidekick is.
I have no idea. I don't know who.
I didn't
is,
know she had a show. I wonder what channel it's
he
on.
Picked. He picked. I think it's an internet show, maybe. But he picked the King's Barbecue because he liked their side of collard greens so much.
Yeah, it's a rib competition.
And that's why he picked. And it was a rib.
Maybe his name's Jordan Carlos.
It might have been. Yeah, I don't know. But it was the worst describing of barbecue I've ever heard.
I got to watch
it. I'm going to have to watch a Triple D's marathon tonight.
Just to cleanse yourself?
And by Triple D's, I mean Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, of course. Yeah. So that's Kansas City of the week. Joe's Kansas City. Congratulations for winning. But then I'm mad at you, Drew Barrymore. So.
Fair.
All right. Where are we going next? Personal pine tar?
Let's do it.
All right. What do you got for me?
So I'm slowly turning into a old curmudgeon. Now, I don't know how slow it is either. The trash pickup this week got delayed because of snow. What did it snow? An inch and a half? A half an inch? We're canceling school and delaying the trash pickup for half an inch?
Yeah, that's soft.
I never wanted to be that guy where it's like, wow, we're canceling school for, you know, well, like back in my day, I walked, you know, literally the phrase.
No one told me about this.
But
no one told me about
what?
This. That the trash was going to be pushed back. No one told me.
How?
No.
Luckily,
one.
You know, Sharon Moeller is my neighbor and you know, emails me and texts me with every update, but like
I've got a crime report neighbor, but I don't have a trash report.
Oh, you
neighbor.
Need a trash report
so,
neighbor.
So like how the hell was I supposed to know? And then it's all groupthink. You know, I see one other person. Actually,
I think I caused everyone to put their trash out Thursday night because no one had. And then I put my trash out and then the whole block. Yeah. Did. I
classic example I of that of group dig. Is this your personal bind or mine?
Go. Okay.
But I mean, that's it. I'm mad. I don't even care that the trash got delayed. Like, it had no impact on me. It literally had no impact on me. Sharon texted me ahead of time. Sharon always texts me, like, also if it's like Martin Luther King Day or like a holiday and it's going to be delayed a little bit. Just such a great reminder, such a great neighbor. But so that doesn't even bother me. And I don't even know if it bothers me that we've gotten so soft as a society that we're canceling school for half an inch of snow. What bothers me is they're forcing me to be this person. And I don't want to be the person who complains about being too soft and canceling school for not enough snow, because I hate that person who is like, well, back in my day, it took 10 inches to cancel school. I hate that person. The city of Kansas City is forcing me to be that person. And that's what makes me mad, is that they're forcing me to be that person because they're being so soft.
Mm-hmm.
She was a witch, bro. So,
yeah.
Anyways, that's my personal blind star.
Yeah. I connected on so many levels. And then I had a gut feeling that I was setting off a chain reaction that didn't need to be set off when I put my trash out Thursday mm-hmm. night. And it came true. I was like, I mean, there was no
like
holiday.
A social experiment.
There was a dusting of snow, but that didn't even cross my mind. Because, like, how would I know that trash didn't pick up on Tuesday or whatever?
How's anyone supposed
to know? Because it never picks up on Tuesday.
Yep.
So I wouldn't know. So I was there with you. All right, my personal pine tar. I made a reel on Instagram.
Okay.
And it's popping off right now on State Your Line. So now I think I got to keep making reels.
Oh.
And I don't know what I'm doing on there at all.
I don't know what a
so
reel
like,
is.
Am I going to have to? You don't know what a reel is? It's like a TikTok on Instagram, I think.
Does it go on your story?
It can. It can go on both.
Is a reel a separate piece of content?
Yeah. And now, like, our Instagram profile has a reel section on it. There's just one in there, so now I'm gonna feel a lot more pressure to create more reels, and I feel like I'm gonna get addicted to that. I have not downloaded TikTok, and I don't want to ever go in there.
Oh, I see the reels.
I'm scared, but I didn't know how to put music on a video and let Instagram allow it to go up. So
can't you just do it on the story?
Yeah, but I want to make a post.
So got it.
It got confusing. Yeah, I need help.
Okay.
I need help.
We need to hire like a 19-year-old who knows all about social media. Maybe like a 16-year-old who knows all about social media.
I think we
help
do.
Help us with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We should get an intern.
All right. It's crossed my mind. It definitely has crossed my mind, an intern.
Yeah, we need that.
Yeah. I mean, if you know anybody looking for an internship,
unpaid, like every other internship.
Yeah, it's in media.
Dude,
of course it's unpaid.
An intern. That's a no-brainer.
Okay, right. Let's do it. All right. Look, we're officially in the hunt for an intern. Yeah, send your resume to stateyourline@gmail.com.
Well, don't send it there because you never check that.
I do. Okay. I do from time to time. Yeah. All right, that is our personal pine tar this week. Next up, we've got our mixed plate of storylines for the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Super Bowl week. There's going to be a lot of storylines in your ears. Here's the ones you got to pay attention to. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
What are you going to tell them?
I'm going to tell them, yeah, the storylines that I think matter. Yeah.
Okay. All right. What episode are we on today?
I think it's 92.
92. Oh, yes. That means I get to go first. Beautiful. All right. So my meat number one of storylines. This one's easy. It's got to be the GOAT debate. Yeah. You're going to get so much GOAT debate crammed down your cram hole
that you're gonna never want to look at a goat again or eat goat cheese again or drink goat's milk again because of all the goat talk. But they're talking about it because people eat it up. And I'm here for it. I am truly excited for what this game can do for Mahomes' legacy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very, very excited. The fact that he has the chance to beat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl. I didn't think he ever would have the chance to beat him in a Super Bowl. And he's got that chance. He's got a chance to close the gap from 1-6 to 2-6 rather than it go from 1-7. So big impact here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all like by the time it's all over, people will know Mahomes is the greatest quarterback to ever play the position. But if Brady has more rings, it'll go back. It's the same.
And the head-to-head.
The head-to-head.
We'll have to hear this all
like
day.
Mahomes,
the rest of our lives.
So I agree. Like as much as we know, the actual truth is that Mahomes is a far better quarterback and is a far better football player. Maybe not far better, but is better, is more talented, is doing things that no one else has done skill-wise.
You're going to have to hear Skip Bayless say, talk about this game forever if Brady wins.
I agree. All right.
And that's insufferable.
My meat number one, I'm going with, and I didn't think about this until BJ said it on our interview, but I'm going legendary status for some of the guys on the defense, particularly Tyrann Mathieu. I think if Tyrann Mathieu wins this, if the Chiefs win this game, I think Tyrann Mathieu is Ed Reed legendary status. I think Tyrann Mathieu is all-time legendary defenders and all-time legendary safeties. I think, you know, he's been an all-pro in back-to-back years. He's a leader. He's really popular. So everyone kind of knows who he is. And that's not a thing that people say about safeties a whole lot. So I think if the Chiefs win this, I think Tyrann Mathieu goes into the legend category. And I think it guarantees him a Hall of Famer, an NFL Hall of Famer. And and I think he's talked about as one of the top five best defensive backs of all time and like one of the greatest defenders. And so legendary status for Tyrann.
Love it. Love it. All right. Let's see. I'm going to go with, here's one. I haven't seen anybody talking about it yet, but I'm talking about it. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has the chance to win back-to-back championships. Won the Natty Championship last year at LSU his senior year. And now here he comes, in his rookie year, could win a Super Bowl. I don't know if anybody's ever done that. I have not looked into it at all because I'm making up this story right now, but it's going to get people talking.
I like it. I like and, it. That story will be published by the end of the week.
Yeah, it definitely will. And someone will actually research it like I did not. But yeah, back-to-back winning championships. That's a hell of a 2 years for young Clyde.
Yep. All right, my meet number two, I'm going with the other GOAT debate, Gronk versus Kelce. People forget Gronk and Kelce were born in the same year. Is that right?
Yeah. People forget that.
Gronk and Kelce born in the same year. Gronk is a freaking dinosaur, and Kelce is in peak prime. And Kelce has literally gotten better every single year in his career. And Gronk was good for three seasons. Okay, Gronk was good for longer than that, but Gronk is a shell of himself. So I'm going Gronk, Kelce, other GOAT debate at the tight end position.
Love
because
that.
If Travis Love wins that. This again, that's two Super Bowls. Gronk's got three, and Kelce's, you know, he's going to pass Gronk, I think, in pretty much every category. Maybe not TDs, but I think every other category.
All right. And touchdowns obviously isn't the best way to evaluate someone's performance. So, all right, I'm going with
for my side number one, jersey colors. Ooh. Going into jersey colors. So I think I couldn't figure out why Tampa got to select which jersey they wanted to wear. Mm-hmm. And maybe it alternates between AFC and NFC. But Tampa got to select the jersey. They went with white, white with the pewter pants. Looking into why they did this, looks like the Bucks are 5-0 in that combo this year. So maybe that's why they wanted to choose it. Or because the Chiefs' worst record this year came in red on white, which was 7-2. Mm. We went undefeated in our white top red pants uniform road this uni. Year. Yeah, we went 7-0 there. So maybe that's why they decided to flip it and let us wear the home reds, which I say good for us, because if you didn't know, red has a, like, when they line up and see us in our red uniforms, like, there is an evolutionary, voluntary association with power and
involuntary,
dominance.
Probably.
Involuntary, yes. I must have not copy and pasted the end part. But basically, so when they line up and see us, they're going to be intimidated. They're going to see power and dominance.
Yeah.
So really, them trying to use some kind of reverse psychology, I think they just reverse psychology themselves.
I love it. Yeah, plus mm-hmm. we won the Super Bowl in reds last year. Ever heard of it?
Exactly.
All right, my side number one, I'm going with this has been heard a lot, and this is like one of the main storylines in the mainstream media, but like it's important. Winning back-to-back Super Bowls is a huge deal. And how many times has it been done? Like,
it's been 16 years.
A few times. It's only been done.
And then before that, I think it was the 49ers in the 80s.
So it is really, really hard. There's an entire Sports Illustrated article today about how, like, most teams are, like, not good the year after they go to the Super Bowl. It's hard to go back-to-back just a 10.
It's hard to go back to the playoffs.
It's really hard to win back-to-back. And again, if the Chiefs win, it elevates this Chiefs team to, you know, one of the greatest Chiefs teams of all time. I think, you know,
greatest NFL teams of all
time. Yeah. Sorry. Greatest NFL teams of all time. I think we'll probably get to that point regardless, because we have the greatest quarterback of all time, the greatest offensive minded coach of all time, and a lot of other things going for us. But still, as far as like, remembering, I don't know. There's something about winning back to back that is like if you were to ask me, like when the, you know, certain team, when the Steelers won their two Super Bowls, I'd be like, I can't really remember. Or like, mm-hmm. you know, it's just when they go back to back, it sticks in your memory.
It's beautiful. All right. My side number two, I'm going to go with the Andy Reid legacy here. I think for a long time, people have just said this generation, Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. Mm-hmm. And that'll never be touched. It's written in stone. It's over. But
however,
we're looking at Andy Reid possibly winning his second Super Bowl. He's going to have played in three. He'll have had success with so many different offenses and so many different quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And if we see that, you know, going to three straight NFC title games with Donovan McNabb, winning multiple AFC Wests in a row with Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he had some success with Kevin Cobb in Philly at the end there. So, and then now, you know, the trajectory he's on with Mahomes now, seems to only be going up, while you look at Belichick, if now we've seen Brady reach this Super Bowl without Belichick, and we've seen how mighty Belichick has struggled this year without Brady, mm-hmm. and if he continues to struggle, that narrative is going to shift on old Bill Belichick quicker than you think.
Maybe if
he continues to miss the playoffs.
Maybe erase that stone that it's written in.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yep. Shave exactly.
It down. All right. My side number two. I'm going with a sad one, but no parade.
Oh boy.
If the Chiefs win, That's a bummer, man. Especially because, you know, bummer. I got to sit front row. I got to ride on the parade route on a bus. I got to go inside Union Station. I got to drink free beer and eat free food. I got to sit in a nice padded.
Did you get pushed out of the bathroom line by
Kayla Nicole?
Kayla Nicole.
NBD.
Yeah. She cut you in, the bathroom
yeah,
line.
Yeah. Just went sprinting into the men's restroom right in front of me, which is a classic college girl move. Like, that's happened in every college bar across America. You know, so because, you know, I get front row access. I get, I get heated, heated places to go. I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss that.
Yeah,
maybe if there's a small celebration, I'll get to go to that. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. All right. Well, that is the mix plate. Some I left off. I think I only ended up leaving one off, but I am enjoying the who has better weapons debate.
It's a big one.
A little bit here.
Yeah.
That's a big one. And that's one that I'm enjoying as
no
well.
Like the home field advantage thing, the fact that it's the first time in 55 Super Bowls that a team had a home field advantage, but then it doesn't really count. That's really interesting and just like an incredible coincidence and a ton of irony there. No big watch parties is a big one. Like, I don't know how to watch, I didn't watch it with a big group.
Well, the CDC says if you're going to have a watch party, watch it outside.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't have a big watch party last year because of how important the game was, but I know a lot of people who did. So that will be, that'll be an interesting storyline.
Yeah. So folks, I guess next time we talk to you,
oh my God,
be after the Super Bowl.
I'm not ready.
Let that set in.
Not ready.
Let that set in. So that's it for us this week. Like we said, we got Brett Allred on next week from Johnny Cause. Be sure to check out our reels on Instagram.
Share the song.
Share the hot tasty lick. Run it back 2020.
Play it again.
We'll play it out. Run it back 2020. Get it stuck in your head. Play it at your Super Bowl parties.
Yes.
Share it everywhere. And that'll do it for us this week, and we'll see you around Kansas City.
Starts off with the parade, then comes draft day, CEH, Willie Gay, Legarius Sneed. Big contracts up next, Brett Veach, pure sex. Salary cap is his bitch, sign everyone we want. Pat Mahomes, half a bill. Chris Jones, just don't sell. COVID's here, no fans at game. Football is back again. Deshaun Watson, Texans. Lamar Jackson, Ravens. Here we go, KC. It's Super Bowl or bust again. Run it back 2020 with the juggernaut offense and the competent defense. Run it back 2020. Though they're trying to stop us, ain't no way to stop us. Quick start 4-0, slip up with John Crudeau. People talking like Patrick is not the MVP. Then we rip off 6 straight, seal the GOAT Tom Brady's fate. Honey Badger, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce in zone. Steelers lose Alex Smith, lose 2 more, they're a myth. Bills look tough, Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs is ballin'. Tennessee Titans, Derrick Henry fightin'. Colts, Browns, they're all clowns, AFC is Kansas City's. Run it back 2020. Though the scores are closer, we don't hit the over. Run it back 2020. Yes, we still keep winning, and pass balls keep spinning. Andy Reid, Miami, Hard Rock, victory. New Orleans, Drew Brees, Falcons, Tony G. Clinch on field, 1 seed, starters rest, there's no need. Grab your beer, down your red, the playoffs run through Arrowhead. Next up come the Browns, anything is possible. Pack got hurt, fuck, I'm scared, he was looking so impaired. Bills, Allen, Buffalo, Lamar Trophy stays at home. We've got Pat no matter what, it's Super Bowl or bust again. Run it back 2020, it's off to Tampa, Tom Brady's a grandpa. Run it back 2020, we'll win the Lombardi, then we're gonna party. Run it back 2020, it's off to Tampa, Tom Brady's a grandpa.
Run it back 2020. We'll win the Lombardi, then we're gonna party.